in terms of opening the meeting so that he will join us as the meeting continue. How are members now joining?
We have 6 members currently in the platform, Mr. Njatu, from the side of the PPO. They are ready to proceed.
What's the time now?
The time is exactly 3 o'clock now.
On the dot, we are ready.
Oh, yes. No, thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to all the members and the PBO and the administration. I'm going to stand in for the chairperson, Honorable Karim, to open the meeting so that we don't delay, as it's not supposed to be a long meeting. So I will then, without delaying, Guleko, just to give us the agenda and also the roll call.
Okay. The roll call, Mr. Njatu, we have Mr. Njatu present, Ms. Mahlangu, Mr. Moletsane, Mr. Tutoit, Mr. Okamp, and Mr. Ryder. I did not receive any apologies.
Yeah, we are quorum, eh?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Njatu.
Yeah, yes. Honorable members, this meeting is not, it's a very straightforward meeting. It's just a briefing that we're going to get from the PBO, which I believe it's just a straightforward meeting. That's why the chairperson have requested me to open the meeting and continue, and he will join us. So then I declare this meeting formally open. There is the agenda. It's only one point. On the agenda is the briefing from the Parliamentary Budget Office, and then after that will be interaction of the committee members. So that is it, members. PBO, we will, I don't know how much time, but I think 30 minutes, if you say, in terms of giving us a presentation, if that will be sufficient, but we will have to try to have the meeting very specific and not to drag it really unnecessary if it could be. So members, the meeting is open.
Honorable Chair.
Yes.
Sorry. This is Siraj Mohammed from PBO. I was in communication with Honorable Karim yesterday evening, and I told him that we would request an hour, but if the chair feels that is too long, maybe we can consider with my director's approval, summarizing much more than we had intended to.
No, I think let's go to 45 minutes.
Will that
be fine? Okay. Yeah. Any honorable Ryder?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, look, noting the content and the complexity of the topic and the fact that we all need to get some good background, I must be honest, it's something I'll need a little bit more time to absorb. Now, I think that an hour would be more than acceptable. And I think, if that's what the PBO is suggesting, I'd be inclined to support their suggestion because, as you say, they're addressing us. So, Che, look, I understand you may have time concerns, but I think in the interest of actually getting to the bottom of the topic we're discussing, an hour would be an excellent idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Okamp.
Honourable
Tutoit, sorry.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I agree with Honourable Ryder. Usually when we receive presentations from numerous presenters, we've got time constraints. This meeting was booked from 3 to 6. So I think let's run through this and handle it accordingly. It's no use rushing and having to come back again.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I don't think it will be any strange match. I think we are on the same page. PBO, we will give you sufficient time, an hour, so that we get to whatever information that we need to have for this meeting will be greatly appreciated. And with any further delay, members, can we then give to PBO?
Good afternoon, Chairperson and our members and colleagues in the platform. I wish and hope you are all well and in good spirits. Thank you so much for the opportunity to bring the committee about the status of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. We take notice of the indication to balance the, you know, more information, but at the same time, try not to be too long. So we'll try to balance it. We had a discussion about it in the team today. We'll try to make sure that we provide key messages, but also not leaving key important information behind. I think I'm with the whole team, the PBO in the platform. And then the issue, and we'll give each other some terms to give the briefs in this regard. So, okay, I think now I'm going to start with that. Okay. So I think we'll aim to stay within 60 minutes, and where we miss other things will come in during the question time to emphasize the point. I mean, also, Chairperson and honorable members, we had limited time to provide substantive analysis. So we were also given that the information comes from different, different entities of government. So they wouldn't necessarily, but hence we have a long presentation because we had to put different inputs from different entities together. It doesn't come from one pool of information. Hence, you see the presentation is too long because we provide data set in its raw format as this and some reflection on policy issues. Look, the presentation aims to, next slide, next slide. The presentation aims to provide a key issues for consideration for members of the side over the economic reconstruction recovery plan set out by government earlier. And therefore, the committee should use this brief as initial status update, and therefore use it as a way of inviting government to provide some of the substantive update of our key issues. But also given that when you look at the economic recovery plan, interventions were made on already existing government programs. So it's not just like the new information. So we should be able to get information from government in this regard. Next slide, introduction slide to that. Just to give context now, taking into account time, I think the NEDLAC agreed an economic construction recovery plan with those key three priority areas, aggressive infrastructure investment. I mean, these first few slides just to give context on which the status will be given. So that's very important to give this background. And some of the areas where we think it's important to focus oversight on. So I'm trying to give that, and I'll give the colleagues to give specific update there. So the agreement is about those key three areas, focus areas, aggressive infrastructure, investment, employment, to focus on areas of creating more employment, particularly localization and reindustrialization, and also putting the export in a regional direction as a part of the recovery and rebuilding the economy. We're also looking at what are some of the blockages in enabling the economic development and growth to deal with those as well. And this meant that the intervention was broken down to three terms, to have immediate terms, to kickstart economy, build confidence in the economy, and deepening industrialization through localization, very important aspect. And also, more important, to deal with to mitigate some of the issues around the COVID-19, how it impacts society, and how it impacts the economy. But I think it was also important to understand that some of the key issues were some of the economic challenges were pre-existing even before the COVID-19. Over the medium to long term, there are those key areas, strategic areas, again, infrastructure, investments, very important aspect, and also trying to ensure that there's activity in economy and target those in Connect enablers to make sure that the economy is able to restart it, you know, to ensure growth and transformation in the economy as a whole. And also there's been a lot of discussion around structural reforms. It's also one of the key areas where government is relying heavily to try to, you know, reconstruct and the economy to recover based on some of the key reforms, special reforms that have been put out as part of the plan there. Next slide. In particular, the special reforms deal some of those main issues around modernization and reforming the network industries and associated government entities, reforming trade policies and strategies to ensure digital interventions as it becomes an important part of the recovery economy. We've seen the signing of the African Regional Integrated Economic Strategy, which really make it important to really focus on regionally to grow the economy. Take advantage of the opportunities within the continent as a whole. Lowering barriers of doing business, some of the key issues, supporting labor-intensive sectors, and high level of addressing or addressing some of the high level concentration in economy and certain sectors, in particular certain sectors, addressing racial, gender, and geographical inequalities, which hampers deep economic growth and development. There's also bilateral units established, which plays a more coordination role between government and some of the main levers of recovery in the economy in that regard. The next slide. I think, Chairperson and honourable members, these are some of the key design principles to ensure a sustainable reconstruction, recovery, and repositioning of our economy. The interventions have to address the economy's both demand and supply side of failures brought about by the COVID-19, having also addressed some of the pre-existing conditions around economic lack of economic growth and transformation. Address or deal with the immediate distress whilst ensuring that there's a long-term plan and dealing with economic growth, dealing with the structural issues of the economy, to ensure that the economy increases its competitiveness and competitive advantage in all levels from local level, regional, and also at the central and also at the international level. We're able to address those. Must also ensure some of these interventions are really measurable. It's one of the main issues, which I think there's to a point whereby some of these interventions are measurable. We can look back what some of the impact that came in what some of the impact brought about by the plan in the economy and society as a whole. Can we set out mechanisms to ensure the economy and society can remain resilient to future shocks? Very important also. Therefore, the intervention has to also take into account some of the societal and economic challenges that we have and that we've always had over the long time. So those are some of the key principles that take of mind when thinking about this recovery, economic reconstruction recovery plan and how it's implemented. In this slide, we talked about that we also want to emphasize that although there are no specific interventions and budget related to these matters of gender equity, economic inclusion of women and youth and people with disability, the intervention have to be geared towards promoting greater participation of Black and historically disadvantaged individuals, women, youth, and people with disability at all levels of economy. But also, there has to be an effective gender mainstreaming in all aspects of the plan, including implementation and clear mechanisms of monitoring in terms of ensuring that there's a clear set aside for women, public procurement, that clear remedies, legal remedies, close gender gaps, women participation in key economic sectors, monitored, implemented, and access to assets and land is key part of it, and also issues women's financial inclusion is part of it. And also the issue of youth, women, and people with disability have to be given priority in this regard. Chairperson and honourable members, I'll give Dr. Alan Chikasulu, and then I'll come in later to close the discussion. Thank you so much. Dr. Alan.
Thank you, Director, and good afternoon, honourable members. Next slide. Slide 9. Members, the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan consists of 8 priority areas, which has been identified for catalytic and enabling interventions. The interventions are mainly to accelerate economic recovery subsequent to the initial stages of the COVID-19 pandemic. The immediate response required was to mobilize resources for collective short-term action. But the biggest reprioritization of funds was towards energy security and mass public employment. The remainder of the priorities, such as industrialization, infrastructure projects, the green economy interventions, agriculture and food security, and reviving the tourism sector, are funded through the normal government budgeting processes. Just to note that some of the longer term infrastructure projects listed in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan are not funded. So some of the macroeconomic interventions are enablers of growth, and it does not require any funding. Some of the other listed interventions are only partly funded, and the reorganization and repurposing of SOEs are also not funded in this plan. We are already on slide 10. So members, this diagram shows the positioning of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan within the bigger planning and budgeting mechanism of government. The NDP informs all government planning and implementation through the five-year medium-term strategic frameworks. The right-hand side of the diagram shows the standard government planning and budgeting system informed by the PFMA. The 7 priorities of the medium-term strategic framework should inform the strategic and annual performance plans of departments supported by the medium-term expenditure framework. The DPME is working with departments to ensure that the medium-term strategic framework targets are included in all the APPs to be able to ensure the success of the integrated system for monitoring and reporting process. Progress on the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework. On the left, the process for reporting on the medium-term strategic framework is still through biannual reporting to Cabinet, and then it's been reported on the program of action. If the integrated system or one plan is successful, the reporting on the program of action will not be necessary. What this means is that the DPME is working with departments to integrate all the medium-term strategic framework indicators into APPs. So if all these indicators are included in APPs, then we will only have one reporting system, which will be very inconvenient because it's regulated by the PFMA, and reporting will happen on a quarterly basis. Currently, in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, it's the framework for 2019 to 2024, but there is no additional reporting on this at this stage on the program of action. So members, although the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan is partially funded by the National Revenue Fund, performance is managed out of the standard mechanisms provided by the PFMA. So the perception is therefore that it is more about getting commitment from social partners and managers in respect of a focused number of areas already part of departmental programs. The reporting on the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan is further in the form of monthly narrative reports to the Presidential Coordinating Committee. So we or Parliament don't have access to those reports, and they are basically just narrative reports explaining progress on some of these interventions. Next slide. So members, we added a few points on the one plan that I mentioned for the proposed by the Department of Public DPME for information purposes. But just to note, members, This initiative is to overcome fragmentation in monitoring and also to facilitate comprehensive reporting to Cabinet and Parliament based on the evidence generated through several DPME, M&E systems, and the PBO strongly proposes that Parliament support this effort by the DPME. So I mentioned in the previous slide, I indicated or I showed the separate reporting system for some of these processes or plans. So that is what we also mean with the fragmentation in monitoring. Next slide. So with this slide, members, we just further emphasize the reason why the one plan needs to be supported. So when we compared the interventions identified by the medium-term strategic framework, priority number two, economic transformation and job creation, with the interventions identified for the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, there's a good correlation between the interventions. The only difference is that priority two of the medium-term strategic framework has developed indicators and targets which makes it measurable, whereas the economic reconstruction and recovery plan did not develop any indicators or targets which actually makes the monitoring of progress very difficult, because it's all those narrative reports on a monthly basis to the PCC. Next slide. So I'll just hand over to the next presenter.
Thank you, honourable members. Some of the key interventions of the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan focus on energy security, as was noted earlier on by Nelia. As you are all very well aware, South Africa has quite a dire energy challenge right now, specifically on electricity. And this has been a binding constraint on growth for the past 12 years, since 2008, we had rolling blackouts. So the ERP seeks to improve energy security of supply, improve the energy mix. When we say energy mix, we mean not just dependent purely on coal, which currently generates about 95% of electricity in this country, between 90 and 95, depending on nuclear and the availability of renewables, but to diversify our dependency or diversify the mix. And finally, and this is quite key amongst the challenges with respect to energy, is to improve the financial and operational status of ESCOM, which again has been a perennial challenge for at least the past 8 to 10 years, and it continues. So with these objectives, the ERP sets out several interventions, and amongst them is to improve capacity. So capacity in the short run, which was supposed to be achieved in the 6 months since the tabling of the ERP, 550 megawatts coming online. Based on our searches, we don't know if this has actually been achieved. Only two of the interventions needed to be achieved in 0 to 6 months. So with respect to the other interventions, we're not reporting on that right now, but merely listing them. The second intervention that needed to be achieved in 6 months of the tabling of the ERP was the signing and implementing of the framework agreement for social compact on supporting ESCOM for inclusive economic growth. Yes, that is quite a mouthful. This was signed in December of last year. So off the range of interventions to have passed the time in which they were supposed to be achieved, one we know has been achieved, and the rest are what you see before you, specifically quite a few about adding more capacity, about supporting ESCOM, and we know in the appropriation bill, which is currently going through Parliament, a further 33 billion rands was appropriated specifically for ESCOM for the current financial year, and this seems to be a requirement going forward, so beyond just the current year into the medium term. Shall we move on to the next slide, please? Again, some of the interventions over here are by diversifying and increasing capacity over the short and over the medium term. The fourth one I wanted to point out over here was preparation for a potential nuclear bill program. In the 2021 appropriation bill, for the 20 million rand was allocated. And this has been an allocation in the appropriations bill of varying amounts for at least the past 4 years. This is rather interesting given that whilst the 2019 IRP, that's the Integrated Resource Plan, which sets out to plan for for energy over the medium term, whilst it notes nuclear as a potential option, there hasn't been any decision on this, and we know the costs associated with this are quite high, so it needs to some further interrogation as to why this is here. And then finally, there's some attempts to try and move towards greater reliance on gas, both for residential purposes, but also to generate electricity. And there has been some movement on that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry, I'll just try to unmute when you're sharing screen, but I think I've got it now. The next section we're dealing with is on industrialization, strategic localization, industrialization, and export promotion. And just one of the things I want to say is that in developing this presentation, we actually drew on the implementation plan of the ERRP that was put out by the coordinating committee, and I think DPMN presidency was central in that. And so all the different interventions you see listed in these different sections follow those headings. But we'll see as we present that there's an overlap in some of it. Some of them are related, and also across different interventions there would be similar ones. Not to get too carried away with that, let me go into assessment of the strategic localization, industrialization, export promotion plan. There has been progress on achieving industry master plans, and this progress is central to the implementation and success of the ERRP's intervention on increased localization for reindustrialization and growth. Now, the master plans were passed in June 2019, and we see that the extension, but also more intensive implementation and discussion between partners, social partners, especially business and government, is sort of linked to this process of trying to intensify this implementation. The master plans assist improvement of industrial capacity and sophistication, focus on export orientation, increased local production and reduced imports, and further the goals of inclusive transformation of the economy through deliberate steps to change ownership and production patterns in a way that increases new Black and women entrants. A number of master plans have been developed, and several are being developed, are in the process of being developed to support conditions conducive for industry growth. The DTIC has developed and begun implementation of 4 master plans in sugar, poultry, retail, clothing, textile, footwear, and leather. That's one master plan, and automotives. There are also several master plans being implemented under development by other government departments. Sorry. Just to give some background on industrialization, particularly manufacturing, but also looking at mining and in the two bottom graphs, including agriculture, forestry, and fishing. The top left one looks at the manufacturing volume of production, and it's an index that uses 2015 as 100. So you can think about the different years before, after 2015 as a percentage of the amount in 2015, and it shows the changes over time. And you'll see that I put a long period there because it gives one a sense of what's been happening and a context for what's been happening more recently. And we see that, you know, through the 80s, there was sort of a stagnation in output. And then from the 90s, particularly from 93, 94, we see fairly rapid growth in manufacturing volume output, until the time of the global financial crisis. And then there's a decline, and it settles at a lower level than the peak in 2007-08. And it stays at that kind of 100% level. And then you see with 2020, the decline. This graph also shows utilization of production capacity. And we see that the overall trend through the from the 80s through to 2020 is one of declining capacity, except again for that period before the global financial crisis, where in my view and analysis, increased levels of debt and activities in financial markets allowed increased consumption and with this increased production capacity usage. But we see that declining again after the global financial crisis. In terms of employment, we see onward downward trend through the period. Some improvements in mining and construction after big declines around about the 2000 or until 2000 from the 80s, but then sort of settling in again after the global financial crisis at the level of sort of around about 100. And again, this graph only goes up to 2018. The data from the Reserve Bank was only up to, 2019. If we look at investment, capital formation, looking at the gray line, which is manufacturing, again, we see it sort of similar to the trend for production, for output, the volume of production index, increasing through the 90s, but then coming down and after global financial crisis actually declining. And so if you think about this link to capacity and use of capacity, we're seeing that. And the one thing that I think is worth keeping in mind, that South African production capacity, manufacturing, productive sectors, other than mining, where capital goods get used up fairly quickly and have to be replaced, the overall level of manufacturing capacity is quite old, capital stock. And so the last graph shows capital stock, and we see the manufacturing stock increasing through the 90s until the global financial crisis, but we see sort of a stagnating period from 98 from 2004. So the only real uptick in investment is sort of 2 or 3 years before the global financial crisis, driven by, again, in my view, increased household and other debt in the country that drives more consumption and investment. And then with the crash, a decline in capital stock. And so we're seeing our levels of capital stock in manufacturing sort of going back to the level it was in the early 90s. We see electricity, gas, and water in that graph, capital stock increasing quite a bit, and obviously that is a lot of that linked to the new build of ESCOM. But if you look at construction, and if you look at we see a decline, a sort of fairly low level, and a slight increase around the time again of the before the global financial crisis, and then it's sort of staying pretty same through that period after the global financial crisis. Now, the interventions in the ERRP, which I'll deal with next, I've categorized them. There are 18 of them. So I'm not going to go through all of these slides. I put them in detail in the slides. So people could go back and refer to them and actually get them. But they're basically three categories one can think of. It's localization, export promotion, and sector development. And we can think of localization to some extent as a precursor to increased exports in certain sectors. But as you localize more, as you increase your capacity, hopefully your productivity grows, hopefully you get more economies of scale in your production processes, and you are able to then venture into export markets. But I think one of the things we have to keep in mind, and so we saw sort of the loss of jobs and poor recent declines in investment and capital stock in our productive sectors. So we sort of going to be making up for lost ground at a time when a lot the world is also focusing on increasing localization, including large economies, those in Europe and the US, and also large economies like China, the US, the European Union, also looking at ways to boost their exports as well. So we're going to be involved in a process where we're trying to rebuild our industries in a very competitive environment. Now, we see that in terms of localization, the master plans in sugar and poultry particularly have had some progress. The sugar master plan was launched in December last year. The poultry master plan in 2020, but there's been quite a bit of development towards the end of the year, especially linked to the ERRP, to the point where we're seeing increasing output and production. There's been a 5% increase in number of chickens produced per week in South Africa, and this is estimated to be almost 1 million chickens produced for slaughter per week increase linked to the poultry plan. The sugar master plan has been an agreement with the industry where users of sugar will, large users of sugar will agree to increase their local content and up to 80% in the first year, and then by 2023, 95%. It's a three-year agreement. I'm not sure what happens after that, and that was launched as part of the implementation of the Sugar Master Plan. There's been work on PPE and having a medical and a non-medical portal for production of PPE, and also use of the PPPFA to allow soft designation of state-owned entities with regard to PPE. So basically, within the procurement processes, PPE would be designated for increased local consumption. There's been a shift towards looking at designating key rail systems, within this 6 months, key rail systems are being designated under the PPPFA. There's been a report on Ester Oil's localization signed by the DG. There's a study on all port equipment, and there's a list of foods and beverages for consideration for localization. It's been submitted to the Consumer Goods Council. There's also been progress on developing a public sector tender monitoring tool, which is connected to 763 websites of government entities and also National Treasury mandatory online platform sites that basically scan for and on an ongoing basis, continuous basis, look at tenders and whether they are following government public sector tenders, whether they are following the rules related to designated sectors and local content. I'm going to move on from here to export promotion and regional integration. There's been a shift, and this is ongoing work, so it's really hard to tell what the progress has been in the last 6 months, but within the ERP and the reporting from Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, they're saying that they are working hard on strengthening regulation and global a review of trade arrangements and the commercial and economic diplomacy with regard to the strategic markets. Within the export promotion and regional integration strategy, there's been a plan for support for township and village economies. And here we're seeing reports of, I put the numbers agenda, so I won't go into the numbers at this point because I think it's be running out of time. The last area, which is very much linked to the localization and the
don't put yourself under pressure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Within this industrialization part of the ERP, the last sort of category I've going to be talking about, sort of looking at sector development and master plans. And here we're seeing implementing the digital economy master plan, which is an ongoing process that progress has been reported on by the relevant departments. We're seeing that there's a plan to enable emergence of industrial and medicinal use of hemp and cannabis, and the draft master plan of that has been completed, and there's been a declaration of hemp as an agricultural crop with related to the Plant Improvement Act of 1976 in October 2020. There's also been discussions on a new regulatory framework for hemp, which should have been concluded by March 2021. While I was doing this report, I wasn't able to actually get information on whether it has been completed on time or not, but that is also then linked to an ERRP goal and meant to be reported on by the end of March. There's a increase in mine exploration and exploration implementation plans to presented to the cabinet in April 2021. And linked to that is a 50% reduction in time frames for mining licenses and supplemental efforts to part of that progress was to invest in green jobs. The one area that was we also picked up on, which is we see in the ERRP, not only here, but also under the macroeconomic section, is sort of take up of the employment tax incentive. And from the side of Department of Trade and Industry, I think they've been reporting that the uptake has been disappointing, where they were expecting 15 billion of revenue to be foregone, and now they see they saw only 2.7 billion of that being taken up, but the employment tax incentive scheme continues. They also think that the take up during COVID, when the restrictions just to certain people were lifted, that employers, given the paperwork involved and other administration, focused on some of the other issues more than the employment tax incentive. I will now move on. My colleague talking about mass public employment to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Saraj, and good afternoon, honorable members. I'll be presenting progress made on the intervention under the mass public employment priority. Maybe just to go back a little bit, we remember that in April 2020, President announced the 100 billion in support of the protection and creation of jobs over the medium-term expenditure framework, which is set to create a cumulative 2.5 million direct jobs by the end of 2021-2022 financial year, and 5 million jobs by the end of 2023-2024 financial year. So, In last year's special adjustment budget, the provision of 19.6 billion was made. And out of that 19.6 billion, there was made approximately 13 billion has been allocated to 11 departments to implement the presidential employment stimulus. So this is the phase one progress that has been made by those implementing departments. I'm not going to read all of them. I'm just going to highlight a few. Maybe in terms of the build and maintain community infrastructure intervention, the responsible department is DPWI, which has appointed more than 1,800 of the young professionals it has exceeded the target that was set. A lot of work opportunities reported by the Department of Works and Infrastructure in the EPWP by the public bodies as the end of March 2021 is more than 980,000. This is based on the quarterly progress report database. And also in terms of strengthening education support intervention, which is led by the Department of Higher Education and the DPE, there's been over 300,000 reported in terms of the school's assistance and the post that has been seen. This is the current largest public employment program in South Africa, and it is paying the minimum wage. We can move to the next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. In terms of the support food security program intervention, the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development has took over 35,000 vouchers for production food to farmers. The Department of Sport, Art and Culture has issued over 200 awards in the film and video sector via the National Film and Video Foundation. And the Department of COCTA is relying on the rollover to support municipalities to increase the labor-intensive methods in the delivery of the infrastructure maintenance project. We can move to the next slide. This slide, I think I have covered this slide in my opening remarks. It just summarizes the where this employment, the presidential employment stimulus come from in the budget allocation and all of that. We can just move to the next slide. Okay, this table mainly shows us how the 12.6 billion is allocated across the brief description of the projects that are being implemented by this department. So this is the 12.6 allocation that has been used to implement these various programs under the presidential employment stimulus. We can move to the next slide. This table shows us a more quantitative snapshot of the progress update as of February 2021. So if we look into this table, the targeted opportunities in phase one were more than 694,000. 12 progress as of February 2021 is 576,674 opportunities that has been created under this program, and that translates to 83% of the progress. There are obviously departments that have underperformed in this regard, e.g. the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, which it overperformed, achieving 126% of the targeted opportunities, and the DPWI, which also achieved 121% of the targeted opportunities. And there are those that underperformed. For an example, the Department of Environmental Fisheries and Forest, which achieved 37%. And on the second last row, which is the Department of COCTA, which achieved zero progress. And part of the reason why zero progress is that the rollout will only take place in this current financial year 2021-2022 because of the municipal infrastructure planning cycle. Maybe honorable member, we may need to note that this is an ongoing work and the numbers may have changed by the time we finalize the presentation. So this is the PES. I'll hand over to my colleague who will continue the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sipetelu. So members, progress for the implementation of infrastructure. The first priority is to ensure affordable transport. The main expenditure on this is in terms of transfers to PRASA for operational costs. and the output for reporting on progress is an annual analysis report on the rolling stock fleet renewable program. And the other output that has been reported is that the output is the annual analysis report on Prasa rail operations. So members, without having access to these reports, it's not possible to measure the progress because these are basically the indicators that that the Department of Transport has identified to report on this progress. The same with the reporting on roads, which is mainly funded by conditional grants, performance are reflected on an annual analysis report on the provincial roads maintenance program. The other output or indicator is annual analysis reports on the SANRAL road maintenance program, etc. So reporting on conditional grants will only be reflected in the annual report of the Department of Transport at the end of the financial year. So these results will only be available in September. These kind of indicators does not allow for the monitoring of progress on a quarterly basis. Some of the other performance that we've shown on this is basically reports that we got from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, which might be in terms of the narrative reports that they receive on the RRP, but the other reports are basically the reports that are in annual performance plans and quarterly performance reports, which are directly linked to the funding of conditional grants and the transport indicators. Next slide. Progress with the implementation of the interventions with the implementation of the digital migration shows that 860,000 subsidized digital television installations have been coordinated and monitored, but a shortfall in funding might be an obstacle for further rollout. This is also an actual output that I found in the quarterly performance report. It's not part of the narrative report. In terms of the reporting to the PCC. The bulk water infrastructure projects are not fully funded, but progress has been made for borrowing. Next slide. Next colleague.
Apologies, just technical issue over there. Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Members, as we know, as was noted earlier on, one of the objectives of the ERP is green industrialization. It's identified as one of the overarching objectives based on its ability to address the persistent challenges the country faces with respect to inequality, poverty, and unemployment, as well as quite important given the effects of global warming and climate change, to allow for sustainable usage of our resources and reduce our dependency on fossil fuels, but also increase our resilience to climate change. The ERP identifies several interventions to this effect. A few of them relate to recycling and trying to promote a circular economy. So instead of putting things in landfill sites, it goes back into the economy through recycling. And this an extension of this would allow for the waste pickers to also be integrated into the formal economy. So these are two of the interventions that I thought would be useful to note over here. Again, what's important to note over here, and as was noted earlier on in the presentation, this is a multi-faceted effort. So it requires interventions and coordination between several national government departments, as well as provincial and local governments and SOEs, which adds complexity to the realization of these goals. Further to this, there's also an attempt, and I think it's in inception stages, to try and use innovative sources of financing for green projects, given that the constraints that we do face in terms of fiscal limitations, some new exploratory types of financing will be investigated. At this point in time, based on the information available, none of the interventions needed to be realized over the first 0 to 6 months. So we'll have to see and keep monitoring on this as time proceeds. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Rashad. I'll be going through the macroeconomic and supportive interventions in what they're calling enablers to economic growth in the ERRP. According to the ERRP, the macroeconomic framework required to support the ERRP should be underpinned by effective coordination of fiscal and monetary policies. There should be mobilization of other financing instruments to ensure that the ERRP is sufficiently funded while maintaining financial sustainability. Debt should be used for productive purposes to generate high growth, which will reduce the debt to GDP ratio. There's also a document that called highlights on the ERRP, they highlight that the imperative is to achieve fiscal sustainability and debt reduction. The changes aim to restore short-term and long-term budget balance and stability while creating favorable conditions for economic growth and development. South Africa should only incur debt if we're able to consistently generate higher relative growth rates in real economic output. At the same time, fiscal consolidation should not crowd out growth or dampen economic recovery. Ultimately, faster growth and rising revenues are the best mechanisms to reduce South Africa's debt. And if you compare the two documents, the one on the actual ERRP document and the one on the highlights, we'll see much more focus on sort of fiscal consolidation in the highlights document and a concern about increasing expenditure. The approach taken in the ERRP and these documents remains one focused on fiscal consolidation, informed by what in my view is an empirically invalidated expansionary fiscal contraction hypothesis, which basically the idea is that if you cut government spending and you bring your budget towards looking like it's more balanced, then you create business confidence, and this then creates further growth, and that a lot of the empirical studies, including work by the IMF, have shown this hypothesis to be incorrect, and that there's a relationship between poorer economic performance and economic growth and reduced government expenditure. So that puts, I think, a dilemma within the way in which we want to approach reconstruction and recovery. The concern of dampening economic recovery in the two documents I referred to is a very valid one, particularly when taking account of the 2021 budget's extensive cuts in government expenditure. Overall, this section of the ERRP that deals with macro interventions and enablers for economic growth focuses on the enablers much more than the macroeconomic interventions, which seem limited to pushing for more fiscal prudence. Including, and here they focus on cost of employment cuts in the public sector. Now, there are 17 interventions listed in this priority area, and obviously we've run out of time to present them in detail. What we've done is we've categorized them into four categories. The first focused on corruption, waste, and also increasing productivity. The second, to support small businesses, SMMEs, and the credit constraint. The third, on fiscal prudence and resource mobilization. And the fourth, on COVID relief. They're basically, and a lot of those measures have actually come to an end, and one or two are ongoing, like the employment tax, incentive, sorry. Now, on progress on corruption and waste and productivity, much of the implementation of the anti-corruption strategy by the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster and SARS seems to be in the form of drafting plans and draft terms of references. So the progress that's being reported and that's being seen. And so we're seeing things like the National Anti-Corruption Strategy Implementation Plan and the Monitoring and Evaluation Framework are still busy underway. The draft terms of reference for the composition of the National Anti-Corruption Advisory Council, it was submitted to the ACPPXCO for comment. The SARS Anti-Corruption Unit and SARS Governance Unit have been in the process of developing a terms of reference for protected disclosure for the Protected Disclosure Committee and the SARS Anti-Corruption Policy. And then SARS Integrity Promotion Unit has drafted a Social Ethics Committee terms of reference and are awaiting approval of the Integrity Anti-Corruption Framework and for institutional confirmation of the Integrity Promotion Policy. Within SARS, there's been implementation of a few areas, including a code of conduct and accompanying guide to the code of conduct, programs to increase ethics and awareness, an integrity testing tool, an integrity barometer. I'm not going to go into that those in more detail. With regard to revenue collection, we see that there's attempts by SARS to restore and strengthen SARS revenue collection. And again, it's really hard to monitor what has been achieved in the 6 months of the ERP's implementation and what's already plans. And part of their narrative reports to the coordination team committee has been to say that they made progress, that revenue collection is better than MTPPS, but I think one can't necessarily ascribe that improvement to the last 6 months. It's been an ongoing process within SARS I think that goes for many of the other government departments as well. In terms of fighting illicit economic activities, the SARS criminal investigations have led to 29 convictions so far in the current financial year. Again, if we have convictions, that means that those have been ongoing cases, and so it's really hard to tell how much of that is linked to the last 6 months, and perhaps none of that is linked to the past 6 months. In terms of enforcement actions executed, we see increased numbers of tax administration actions, inquiries into the gold sector and illicit financial flows, 1,445 illicit trade interventions, 16 detentions linked to those, custom-related actions, inter-agency working group on illicit trade, we have been 33 in civil investigations. Again, it's really hard to tell how much of that is linked to ERRP specifically. There has been a move within government to improve customer centricity, and that's within government departments relating to each other, but and servicing one another, but also for the public. And here we see the Office of Chief Procurement Officer's Supply Chain Management ICT unit is developing a supply chain ICT automation grand plan together with the provinces. Again, we see sort of seeing plans for development and policies being developed. And so again, hard to measure actual progress in the last 6 months. In terms of skills strategy orientation, yeah, we do have reportable, I think, progress with related to ERRP. A total of 93 occupations in shortage across the country and also linked directly to the implementation of the ERRP have been identified. And approximately 50 of the 93 occupations have been shortlisted for direct intervention in the priority skills plan. And then there's a reorganization and repurposing of SOEs, and this is with DPE. The ministerial cluster has received a status report. They received it on the 9th of October on SOEs, repurposing efforts by various government departments. Funding options are being explored for the establishment of the delivery unit in the DPE. And the work of the delivery unit will be proceeding to government rule and ley lines in sort of plans being developed finance being searched and not concrete outputs to show in the last 6 months. Well, I suppose you can see a report handed over as a concrete output. There's support for SMMEs and startups and cooperatives. And some of this is sort of a repeat, I think, of what I may have said within the industrialization and localization team, but we do see the Department of Business the department working on small business development, signing a culture for the implementation of a cross support program, an agreement with the National Department of Tourism. So they asked to increase and hopefully intensify coordination and cooperation across government linked to ERRP goals. And then they've got quite a few pending partnerships that they're reporting as well. In terms of supporting investment, and especially by small business who design more appropriate financing products, including for microfinance, National Treasury has been working on this. And again, this is sort of in development. The macro input in this section is sort of ensuring fiscal prudence. And again, this has been included in the ERRP, but it's been an ongoing part of government's work even before the ERRP was agreed to. And the moves to manage the wage bill are what is focused on here. And also, there's a move to facilitate access to domestic savings for greater investment into non-consumptive public expenditure. And here we're seeing a commitment of $100 billion has been made by government to the infrastructure fund, including $10 billion over the next 3 years. And this has been sort of announced, I think, for ERP. But hopefully more intense work done on it to implement it as part of the ERRP. I won't go into the measures in terms of the employment tax initiative incentive. I spoke about that before. One of the things reported in ERRP is that there's just they will continue to protect workers through UIF and inspections and the compensation fund. And that the progress reported on is only linked to that we've seen related to the last 6 months, and ERP has only been linked to COVID-19 TERS and points to normal ongoing UIS activities. And yeah, so I will pass on to my colleague who will deal with strengthening agriculture and food security. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir Raj. So members, the strengthening of agriculture and food security is mainly funded by conditional grants. The outputs of the grants include the linking of farm products to markets and also to support the emerging and small-scale farmers. The fourth quarter report from the APP of the Department of Agriculture shows that 2,097 hectares acquired for farm dwellers, labor tenants, against a target of 5,857 hectares, 14,776 hectares of state and state land were allocated against a target of 525,330. In addition, 81 farms were supported through the Land Development Support Program against a target of 116. 336 land claims were finalized against the target of 295, so they, it reflects overperformance on that indicator. 120 smallholder producers were capacitated on crop suitability to climate change programs. So members, you will see that I've included indicators that is actually measured. So basically what happened is I had to mine this data from the quarterly performance report to be able to provide you with an indication of what has happened in the previous financial year. So these numbers are basically not just for the last 6 months, but for this is the annual progress. On ensuring more support to emerging and small-scale farmers. Next slide. So members, several interventions have been prioritized for immediate support to recover and grow the tourism, cultural and creative industries. So in terms of the current budget performance, the department received 34 requests for assistance and 6 high impact distressed tourism projects have been included in investment mobilization efforts. In terms of the rollout of maintenance programs, infrastructure maintenance programs, were implemented in three national parks. This is in terms of the quarterly performance reports, but other maintenance programs are currently implemented in 19 South African national parks and will be expanded. The Development Bank of South Africa also supports the department with an infrastructure maintenance program, specifically in provincial state-owned attractions. Next slide. Members, to reignite the domestic tourism market and to implement norms and standards, the Deputy Minister launched domestic tourism campaigns in six provinces, and they've been listed, and a draft review of the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa was developed. A draft review was developed, and a domestic tourism scheme was also implemented in terms of this intervention. And then in February 2021, a draft norms and standards was still open for public comment with a closing date of 1 April 2021. Next slide. So members, in support of the ERRP, the Department of Tourism also developed a tourism sector recovery plan, not just to reignite demand, but also to strengthen enabling capacity for long-term sustainability. I'm not going to go through this plan because it's totally in line with the interventions in the ERRP. Now I'll hand over to the director to conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, colleagues. Chairperson, honorable members, really what we're trying to emphasize is that there is an agreement among social partners about the plan to support economic construction recovery plan. But I think a lot has happened since the plan was announced in October. And some of these issues are likely to affect the implementation of plan or the realization of some of these economic recovery plan mechanisms. I mean, obviously, just immediately after then, the plan was announced, we were going to the year-end holidays where naturally it's a cool-off time for economy. But also globally and also in South Africa, a lot has been placed, a lot of recovery mechanisms are expected, measures to support economic recoveries globally and domestically. We're relying largely on the COVID-19 vaccination rollout. And you'd see that our rollout program has not taken off as it was expected and likely to affect the implementation there. But also, we've had a hard lockdown to deal with the second wave of COVID-19. But also, the issue around the budget dispositions and budget cuts, does affect the demand side of economy, which also, as we've emphasized, the need for both a demand and supply side of economy. And the budget cuts and budget dispositions are likely to also affect the recovery over the medium term in this regard. But also the discussion about economic construction has inadequately addressed debating views around the nature and cause of the South African construction problem, economic structural problems that constrain inclusive growth over time. And that will likely make see us not really getting much of growth that we so much require and else transformation in the economy without addressing those key structural issues that are leading to lack of growth. Next slide. The ERP is partly funded by government and performance and is managed. Some of the performance measures are managed outside standard government protocols and processes and regulations. So there has to be a way for parliament oversight to bring some of these mechanisms back into parliament oversight, realizing or monitoring the implementation of the plan, or at least like the question saying, centering it around already government programs are in place. The approach, as emphasized, taken remains much focused on supply side of the economy, and clearly cutting government expenditure as proposed in the budget would likely dampen the economic recovery earlier. And also the other thing, there has to be realization that we need to have that from both our experiences and experiences in other economies and the literature that the implementation of the recovery plans are hugely complex and requires taking into account these mechanisms to realize those mechanisms. These are some of the measures that need to be taken into account. For the sake of time, Chairperson and other members will take questions. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ganges and the PBO team. I think it's a very comprehensive report on the progress made. And we had 5 presenters and who presented on different sections. So to the members, I think it will be assistance if we could focus on our questions on the specific sections that was reported, because one presenter presented more than once, so that one just follow in terms of the specific questions, so to be on the sections in terms of the presentations. Honorable Ryder, I see your hand is up.
Oh, we're ready for questions.
I don't see mine.
Okay, Honorable Ryder. Okay, let me just get through the list of the members.
No, Ryder was first this time. No, you are always first.
Okay, let's follow sequence the Honorable Ryder, Honorable Masangu,
Honorable Mletsane,
Honorable Mletsane,
Honorable Mkiva, and Honorable Karim.
Honorable Mkiva and Honorable Karim. Okay, can we then, any further names, Kuleko?
No, Chair, that's about it.
Okay. Okay, then thank you very much. Honorable, let's start Honorable Ryder.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe I should apologize for turning my video on, because all you've got is the bland background of a Kosher Park bedroom. But nonetheless, Chair, thank you very much. And to PBO, thank you. Good topic. And I think you would have seen from my comments in support of your pleas earlier, something that I think is very useful, lots of value in it, specifically considering where we are in the process. Now, just in terms of the timeline, so the economic recovery and economic reconstruction and recovery plan was tabled by the president in October last year. So I think it's important that it gets looked at in the context of what has happened since then. And I think it's probably fair to say that, you know, in terms of budget allocation, et cetera, not a lot of agility exists inside a year. So, you know, I note, for example, some of the DTIs projects are not necessarily projects that are specifically speaking to the ERRP, but they are probably more existing projects that have been panel beated to fit into the ERRP block. So I was hoping maybe to get a bit of a better understanding of where we're going in terms of the budget, the forthcoming budget. Because essentially, and I mean, the comment was made, by Nelia earlier, there were a number of the projects that were unfunded at this stage. And an unfunded project remains a dream, as we all know. So just kind of an indication in terms of political will going forward. I'd like to get some input from the PBO of where we're looking in terms of the budgets and the programs that are coming up, the budgeted programs and allocations that are coming up in the budget that we are currently looking at approving. You know, how is that talking to the economic reconstruction recovery plan? I'd also appreciate a bit of a comment from PBO in terms of the ERRP and the link to the NDP. Is there a link? Should there be a link? Is the link strong enough? Because, of course, we've got the NDP, which is the broad overreaching plan for us, and I think this could possibly link fairly close into it, because I believe that some of the themes run quite strongly across the two different documents. Yeah, my next commentary is really just a note to say that the various different legs, the infrastructure development, the enabling conditions, etc., no one can stand on its own. And so, you know, those legs all need to work together. Just some background, please, and noting that I said at the beginning that I wanted a good, strong chance to give a presentation, just some of the locus standi of NEDLAC. If you can tell us a little bit more, you know, it's not something that I've studied closely, so I don't know the history of NEDLAC and what its legal status or legal standing is. If you can point me in that direction. And there was mention of the Woodland Lela unit. I don't know who funds that. Then, of course, the fact that, you know, the DPME came up quite strongly, the DTI came up quite strongly. Small business, I felt there wasn't much focus. But obviously the ERRP has a cross-departmental, interdepartmental, interministerial type of focus. Who's coordinating amongst the various different departments? Who's in charge of this? I mean, who's the one who's giving this ERRP a little bit of momentum? Is it just something that the president himself is driving? Or has an interministerial team been set up under perhaps one of the ministers in the presidency to drive the thing and give it a little bit of focus? Because I think that there's a danger that if it's not focused on, if there's not someone driving it, then each individual department under their minister is going to continue pretty much in the same trajectory that they've been on. Yeah, there was a slide on sugar, Mr. Mohammed, that made no sense. I just made a note of it, and perhaps we needed to get a bit more information on that. Your explanation, because the slide doesn't make sense, the wording that says that something about three, which lost me totally, and there was nothing in your explanation that covered that further. The progress from culture and the transport department is extremely low. And I'm a little bit concerned, you know, there was a comment to try and justify it, but, you know, when we're looking at the issues around COGTA and the CWP workers, what I'm seeing on the ground specifically is the CWP has ground to a miserable halt. And of course, there's many people out there that rely on those CWP payments, as small as they are, but also on the ability that the CWP gives them to upskill themselves, to get themselves out there, to give themselves something to put on you know, as a reference, and give themselves hopefully a leg up so that they can get out of CWP and reduce their reliance. Now, CWP has just stopped. Certainly in the southern half of Gauteng. I'm not sure what other areas are seeing. I have seen EPWP out there, which is marvelous, but the CWP program seems to have ground to a halt. It could also have a lot to do with the implementing agent in Gauteng, who I believe is having a bit of a dispute at the moment. But yeah, I was disappointed to see specifically COGTA at 0%, especially considering that the minister there holds such a key position. Chair, I'm going to leave it at that. Hopefully, there might be a bit of time later on. I can get into some more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ryder. Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to all the members. Chairperson, I'll start. I heard your directive on how we must ask the question. I wish you should have said that at the beginning, but you'll pardon me. I'll start from bottom up on the ERRP, the Economic Recovery Plan. I know that you are giving us information, but because you are not the implementers, you are not the ones that are planning this, you are not responsible for these plans, but you are giving us information in as far as progress is concerned and what is happening so that we can do better monitoring as TBO. So I don't know if this might help. Somewhere when you were presenting in the slide, you spoke of the deputy minister having identified 6 provinces. And without really being a crime baby, I think as in Mpumalanga, we really need that more. As a rural province, but economic activities are less in Mpumalanga. You can mention the issue of agriculture, the mineral, you know, there are no real economic interventions. So if you were the department responsible, like Honorable Ryder has asked, who decides? I was going to ask whoever the authority that decides, what criteria are they using in terms of identifying the intervention? I know they can't be everywhere. They need to start somewhere. But one is worried that it looks like in everything, you know, Mpumalanga is being forgotten. We talk of the infrastructure, the Presidential Infrastructure Commission. And that's where the Muloto corridor was in. And even when you see this economic intervention, it's not there. But I understand that you are, to a certain extent, frustrated. Up there, you spoke of the plan. I need clarity that from the monitoring and evaluation, you only get the report. You don't have access to those quarterly reports. You only get the reports at the end of the financial year or something like that. And that gives me a problem or a worry, if that's the understanding, if that's the reality. I might have misunderstood you. But if that's the case, then it's a problem, because I think those reports should be for public consumption, and you are an institution in parliament that needs to assist and empower the public reps to have information, to have better understanding, to can be able to have a better oversight. So if we can't access those progress, it becomes a problem for me. I don't know if I got you correctly. I'll raise only those two points, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masangu. Honorable Morosane.
Thank you, Chair. Let me apologize for the video. It was written there, connection is unstable, so I can't switch on my video, but the message will reach you. On the presentation there on page 28, just want to find out from the PBO in terms of the reports at their exposure. It says that in April 2020, the president announced 100 billion in support of job protection and creation in response. Stimulus will enable the creation of cumulative 2.5 million direct jobs by the end of the 2021-2022. I just want to find out how far in terms of percentage is the government in job creation towards the target of 2021-2022. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Molosane, Honorable Mkiva.
Manibulele mhlali ngaphambili ndibulise kuwe ndibulise nakumalungu wale committee. Bengicela ubuza dokotela mntakwethu. Okokubana njengoba nisithilela nisendlalela ubume lo bobula mali lalonyaka. Khawukhe uzame uphuhlisa into bana njengoba besizile xa bekubekwa umphathiswa wezemali. Ebenike ingcaciso into yokokubana isixa semali eninzi siya emakhaya. Ngakumbi kumaphondo ahlelelekileyo anoludwe lelali. Apho abantu batsala nzima kakhulu. Okokuqala ezimbalini into yokokubana uhlahlo lwabuye mali. Lube nefuthe lokokuba imali eninzi iye kuloo maphondo anjengamaphondo aseLimpopo, eMpumalanga, KwaZulu, eMpuma Kapa, phakathi kwamanye aphambili. Ndiqaphela into okokubana ke mntana omhle aniyitsolisi loo nto njengokubana ithetha kanti yinto eyenza umahluko ebekumele into okokubana niyasixhobisa ngayo ukwenzela uba ze sikwazi ukuqaphela. Xa sithe chungcembe nalo nyaka siyogqitha nawe ekugqibeleni. Sazi into yobana xa sihlaba amadlala, siyibone laa mali into yobana ingaba ngenene nangenyaniso na iwenzile na umahluko ekufikeni kwayo njengoba kuthiwa enintsi iye okokuqala ezimbalini zeli lizwe kumaphondo anobume belali. Ndiyayifuna ke loo nto leyo uba niyigxinimise kabanzi. Ukwenzela into yobana sithintele into yokokubana usiwe imali eninzi kula maphondo ze ingasetyenziswa ngenxa yento yokokubana kungekho mandla nabuchule boyisebenzisa kuphinde kuthiwa iphinde yajikiswa. Mna ndifuna nisiqulathise kwaye niyibhensise loo nto siyibone ibe selubala ukwenzela uba siqinisekise uba laa mali izawutsho yenza umahluko kuba sinenkolo yokokubana indlela ebesisoloko sinyathela ngayo apho kuhlahlo lwabiwomali siqhubekeka nento ebikade isenzeka yamazolo. Ke besinento ethi kuyafuneka into yobana indlela esenza ngayo ngokubheka phambili ukuze ubume belizwe lethu bujike bube nomthitha obunomahluko kwaye kubekho ungqamaniso phakathi kwento eyenziwa ezidolophini nayento eyenziwa ezilalini ukwenzela into yobana sizive singabemi belizwe linye ngokwendlela ekwenzeka ngayo. Ibinganga ingaphuhla loo nto. Okwesibini, kuthethwe ngamazwe apha abekwa ngokokubana ziindawo zoshishino nokurhweba ezibalulekileyo exa ibekwa ngesiNgesi kuthiwa zi-strategic markets. Ndiyarhalela uyazi into yokokubana ngawaphi loo mazwe abandakanywa ngaloo ndlela. Kwaye okwesibini, ingaba sithi na singabantu beli lizwe abaxhamla kakhulu kobo budlelwane okanye ngaba bantu sibabiza ngoba zi-strategic markets ezingaba ikwazizo ezixhamlayo kwakuthi. Siyarhalela into yobana niyiphuhlise loo nto leyo kuba ndinesirhoqo yento yokokubana indlela esirhweba ngayo nendlela ubudlelwane esibuqhubayo siqhubekeka nobudlelwane bamazwe asentshona ubukhulu becala. Andiyiboni into yobana sifaka isandla esibanzi ngakumbi kumazwe afana ne-BRICS, iChina ne-Russia kwakunye namanye amazwe afana namazwe anjenge-former Yugoslavian countries. Ndiyarhalela mna kubekho utshintsho kwindlela yokwenza ibe ingabikho ngathi daliwe into yokokubana indlela yokunyathela kwethu ibe ile sinyathela ngayo xa sichophele umcimbi wemali nohlahlo lwabiwemali. Iyafuneka ukubana sikhe siyitshintshe ke sibuye senze ingcingane entsha sicingele ubuni bethu ngendlela yokwenza ukwenzela into yobana sikwazi into yoba siqhwangushe siwubone umsebenzi esiwenza kuqhumuthulu kwaye sibone nokumila kwezinto phezu kwegade into yobana eneneni isimo selizwe lethu nomkhitha waso uyatshintsha nelali kuyaqala ukwenzeka into yobana kubekho umahluko obonakalayo uba sinelali ezinendlela ezisemcimbini ezityatyekwe ngetha nazo njengeendlela zasezidolophini nasezilokishini. Mna ndirhalela into elolo hlobo ukwenzela uba singabona sidibana apha kakuqala unyaka sicula iculo elinye elingabonakalisi into yobana ukhona umahluko esiwenzayo. Ndisoloko ndiyimemelela ke loo nto into yobana yanga xa sidibana ngonyaka ka-2022 singaphinde sibe sicula eli culo linye sibe sikhumsha apha sikhumsha into enye kodwa le nto siyikhumshayo ayiye ekubeni itshintshe impilo yabantu bethu ngakumbi kubantu abahlelelekileyo. Sifuna into yobana nje kuba imali eninzi siye ezilaleni siyibone loo nto enyanisweni ibe yimboniselo nebonisa ebonakala ngokuthe cha okomve bhoko ehlungwini. Enkosi, enkosi mhlala ngaphambili.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kiva. Is somebody speaking?
Yes, Honorable Chair, I don't know if you or the Honorable Karim will translate this speech, if you don't mind, please, since no translation services are available during committee meetings.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Okam Tatwetne. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Kiva. I think from the position of the chair, I think the honorable member have just used his comfortable language to bring the message to the community, believing also that as members that we also follow the question. So I would also check with Dr. Jankis, as he also understand the language which was one of them Kiva was using, so that in responding that he also cover in terms of the question, so that the members who didn't follow the question, so that to understand what was the context of the question, but in very simple term, members, that the member, from my point of view, raised the matter of transformation and also the matter of the budget being going to the villages, which is something new, that the budget is being focusing on villages, and also the lobbying of funds from international, mentioning BRICS and other countries. So in terms of the budget, to make a difference in our communities. Yeah, I think I tried to put it into a nutshell, so that when the PBO is responding, that I believe that from the PBO, I would request Dr. Janki just to highlight the question when responding to the question of Honorable Kiva. Yeah, I think let's take it from that point, honorable members, and then so that I believe we will all be accommodated. Then members, going forward, is we've got the next question will be Honorable Karim. Then in the same breath, after Honorable Karim, just a moment, Honorable Karim. At the same breath, honorable members, when Honorable Karim will be finished with his question, we will then give an opportunity to PBO to respond. And then when PBO is responding, Honorable Karim will take the meeting forward, as we did communicate that I have also another commitment in preparing the presentation, my presentation for tomorrow morning's meeting for WIPRI. So I will be in a cash 22. So, but the chairperson will take the meeting after he has raised his questions. We will give to PBO to respond, and then he will then handle the meeting. Honorable Karim, questions?
Thank you, chairperson. Firstly, obviously, I think you should stay as long as you can as the chair. There's no need for me to, I mean, really unnecessary. What am I going to do that you can't do? So that's the first thing to say. So can you please stay in the chair until you really have to leave? It'll be disruptive, really. Secondly, just to inform the meeting, I'm sure the chair has said so, and maybe the secretary added, but I just couldn't make 3 o'clock meeting. If I tell you it is beyond my control, you will say, yeah, you see, you know, typical MP blaming some external force. Well, actually, no, it's entirely my fault. I had misunderstood. I thought this meeting was taking place this morning. So I'd made some arrangement from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and it was impossible to change it. I tried right up till about 1:30. And that's why I told you finally that there's no choice. I have to be exempt. And in fact, I did join at 4:03, and I heard Siraj offer, I think, slide 41, and then the following two speakers. I have, in fact, browsed through the submission last night. The first thing I'd like to raise is, obviously, this is looking at, you know, what's happened to the ERRP since it was introduced. It's obviously not dealing with, it wasn't expected to do so, the implications for the immediate and slightly longer term future, taking into account such things as, well, a full rollout of a vaccine program, the huge implications of that for the ERRP. Secondly, what about this third wave that's coming? Now, no scientist can say with certainty what it means. It ranges from people saying, well, you know, it'll be certainly less challenging than the second wave. We've had our major, what you call, might call third wave of Europe and the second wave of India. And that in any case, the variants in the Indian, or the mutations, I think, in the Indian variant are fewer than our variant has. And the strains are less likely to have the same effect here as there, as it's substantially the failure of the government of India to manage this virus that is a bigger cause than the actual new strain. But be that as it may, look, we don't know. Nobody knows. The world's greatest scientists don't know. The fact is that this is a huge drain, a necessary one, on the state as a whole, not just the health services. And I'm not sure that in October when the government shaped the ERRP, those issues were factored in because they couldn't be in any case. So I know it's not fair on the PBO, but it'll be interesting to hear whether they've got any ideas. Obviously, there are volatilities and uncertainties about this third wave. I also know that, you know, they're not meant to answer for inadequacies in implementation. That's the job of the government. And we did think about whether we shouldn't invite Treasury and so on, but it occurred to me that let's just hear the PBO first. Let them take the full slot as an independent parliamentary institution. Because if we have Treasury, firstly, Treasury is going to rightly say, well, you know what? This thing is not simply our responsibility. You know, trade and industry and competition has to be here, small business, and so on and so on. Everybody has to be here, it's governments as a whole. So we can't bring all the departments here. But if you know, we were able to, both NA and NCOP committees, we should have a full briefing by government as a whole, led by, you know, the relevant key departments, not least Treasury, on where this ERRP is going. Because you know, getting Treasury is not going to be adequate. So if members have got some sort of view about how we proceed, please write to Nkululeko and me, and we'll see what we can do, bearing in mind that bringing committees together, it'll have to be done by higher powers, the two house chairs, that means Mr. Frolic and Mr. Nyambi, you know, because it will be impossible for us to coordinate. Certainly we can't do anything about the NA side. The third issue is on the matter of national treasury. I want to make something very clear. I noticed that Cindy's here. Well, she was here when I joined. No, she's here. Now, I got an email we are CC'd into exchanges, Cindy, and whoever else is here from National Treasury. And I couldn't work out on my cell phone what it was that I was supposed to do. So I phoned the person who was sending me those emails from the PBO side and explained to him yesterday, what is it that really is required? And he said, the matter's been resolved. But we need to be clear, Chairperson, members, that we've been through this before, and I hope Cindy's listening, and she must communicate this to the DG, and if need be, I will do so, probably in less diplomatic ways. So Cindy, can you manage this, and the Minister and Deputy Minister, that the PBO has the same right as any committee, as far as I know. Frank, are you here? If I'm wrong, intervene when I'm done, but if, or at least when the Chair allows. You know, I really think there's no debate about this. PBO is an institution of Parliament. It's even in the Money Bills Act. So there can never be a situation unless there's a law or rule, and Frank must arbitrate, and the lawyers of National Treasury, that PBO doesn't get the cooperation the committee would. So let's not discuss that. Maybe let's take it offline. You know, but you know, the law, my interpretation of the of what's required is actually, unless it's wrong, you know, Frank, you don't need to say anything. So if you hear and you're silent, I take it that's correct. They must have the same information we do. Or if it comes to it, the people must just refer to us, or in fact, the committee secretary, I don't want to even see it. And you must just forward it on behalf of me as the chair of this committee, that that's the information PBO wants. On the matter of translation, now, I know not everybody will agree with me, but I'll just tell you my take on this. So firstly, I think people should speak in any language they want to. The Khoi sign languages too, really. I mean, really, it's outrageous that we don't recognize those languages, as I've said 1,000 times. Secondly, my own view, and I speak for myself, but I speak particularly for myself, and I want to make this clear. Particularly, I think it's now getting tiresome. Each time this issue comes up, first it was funny. Okay, Karim will translate, knowing full well I can't do it. So when it's funny, now it's a bit boring, especially as it comes both orally and then it comes in the chat group. It's tiresome, really, in my view. So here it is. It's now 50 years, I'm reminded by a schoolmate of mine, this month, May 31st, when I first became politically active and organized the Anti-Republic Day commemorations, not a political protest in the school I was in. And you know, there's no excuse, Chairperson, for me not to speak isiZulu when 98% of the people I deal with politically are not white or Indian or so-called colors. The African people, who are the people that vote for the party on whose platform I serve. So really, it's disgusting. It's shameful that I don't speak isiZulu. Now, I've said that since 1995 or something, when I first asked for the school laboratory, language laboratory for Parliament so that we can learn languages. So particularly, it's tiresome now. Can we just forego it? I mean, what more you want me to do? I can flog myself. It's disgusting. What else can I say? It's outrageous 50 years later that I don't speak isiZulu. And there's no excuse, really. So I don't speak it. But I think non-Africans should also be clear. It is now 27 years later that I do not speak isiZulu. Is no excuse, really. Nobody needs to translate for me. It's my problem. I should stew. I stopped people, Comrade Chair, in ANC meetings translating when I'm the only non-African there. Or sometimes JJ is, but he understands more than I do. So, you know, I'm clear about that. There's no need to accommodate people. Well, I don't need to accommodate me. We have, Comrade Chair, to inform the newer members, raised this thing in 2000. That can't we please have translation? We had public hearings on the Section 185 bill. You know, the cultural, religious language groups. People might be interested in how complex it is. So somebody came to us, a wonderfully charming old man. I'm telling you this anecdotally, but it shows you how complex things are. And he says he speaks, if I remember, Northern, you see, Ndebele, and the language is not recognized. It was a marvelous input, if you can trace it. I don't know. In those days, we didn't have channel 408, where he spoke the language and he said, yeah, you see these people, yeah, they think they know Ndebele, they won't understand me. And there was a hoot of laughter because actually it was admission. And he was demanding that if you have all these languages, what about my language? About 2 years later, a non-Ngumi speaking person in a committee that I was chairing raised the matter that he's not going to translate what he's saying. I think he was speaking Sisutu or something. Not everybody who was Ngumi speaking understood it. It wasn't a non-African. So again, I raised the matter. Frindi Jinwala was still the speaker then about a language laboratory. So my attitude, Comrade Chair, is as a chairperson, I'm obliged to rules of parliament. But as an individual now, there's no need to translate for me. If I have to, I can check with somebody who understands GCZero and check it offline. Now you can do it with the system. So on that matter, I think, you know, I will raise it again with parliament. We need some clarity on it. Because I told us the last time, you know, I don't need to hear it, but yeah, I'm about to finish. What I'm saying is that the matter should keep coming up. The last time we were told it's not possible to have a conversation for all committee meetings. We don't have the capacity. So this is a matter that Parliament needs to address. I'll raise it with Jomo Nyambi in the first instance. But I think for myself, I don't think anybody should translate what Dulani said. Thank you. Chairperson, please.
Thank you very much, Honorable Karim. Honorable Mashangu.
It's Mashangu, Honorable.
Yes.
Yes, Mashangu. Honorable.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you.
I want to talk to what the Honorable Karim has said. I just thought he is one person with the greatest sense of humor. And what I said, I thought you would understand that there's no sinister in it. There's nothing untoward. And I think he usually makes jokes, and we usually make jokes to each other. And when the day is not right, maybe he must let us. It was not meant to say he must hear. And it's because I understood you to be one person who had a huge sense of humor. And I withdraw. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Mashangu, I could not pick up everything that you have raised. But let's say for the sake of the meeting and the progress of the meeting, we have received the presentations from the PBO and the briefing to the committee on the progress made on different areas on the budget. Then we have also received questions from the members to PBO. So then I think let's then go to the back to PBO so that PBO then respond on the questions. Yeah, I think for the sake of the progress of this meeting, let's ask PBO to respond on the questions. I think let's take it from there. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to honourable members for the questions. I think very enriching indeed. I think the point is the presentation really it meant to empower the committee with this information that we give in, and I think we it's very important that we emphasize that, and as I said at the beginning of the presentation, the information that we gave it out as raw it was, they will probably need more substantive analysis. I think the point that we want to also raise here, which it has been probably raised before, is around the issue of getting information in a more streamlined way or in a more useful way for oversight purposes. The point I want to also note and acknowledge that, look, we have short time to have this work quickly done. And I think we, even in our request for information to government teams, obviously we had a limited time, and they also had limited time, and they could have been, dragging the time and so on. You know, we have the powers in the Act to confirm to members to request information. The Act doesn't empower us to request information. So I understand that there could have been the drag and so on. But I think I take note that there was so much that needs to be done, and there's so much little time needed to do. But again, it boils back to the purpose of presentation, so give members some indication what happens. And I think linking this back to how information as Parliament needs to question government, how useful the way it's packed up from the government side, that needs to be one issue that really comes to the table in discussions on this matter. More so that when you look at the ARRP, in a way it is, there isn't very much easier to measure or monitor and report on measuring the impact or the progress in particular. But I think what we want to also emphasize, if we put this information very much streamlining it within the major government policy. Honorable Ryder asked in terms of the NDP link and all of that. When you look at the 7 points from the MTSF for the next 5 years since 2019, you realize that one slide does show that the point two on economic transformation, most of the ERT targets and interventions are within that priority in the MTSF. So you can rest assured that some of these things picked up in that regard. And as much as we, it's sidelined as an ERP, but it needs to fit into the more broader. Hence one of the points we emphasize is that, look, some of the issues are not really outside, are already within the programs that are in place. That should be easy to actually report on the progress in those, because it's not like there were new programs brought in. It's within the framework of government framework, government program frameworks as they are. So that's one to emphasize the point. But yes, I take your point that, we couldn't get information in time because of the powers, but I think there was short time to the presentation. And where we are at this stage, it was useful to provide this data, and the committee parliament can monitor in over time and request government to run information in a way that is useful. It shows the impact of the intervention in the economy and the society at large. I'll give the team to respond to specific points. There's a quick run through. I think, Honorable Chair, you have summarized the points raised by Honorable Kiva quite very nicely point to respond to them. I think the 2020 developmental indicators statistics reports does actually show that the poorer provinces do indeed rely heavily on the budget allocations compared to more, the other provinces who are more seen as more richer. So it's very important to try and emphasize the point. Indeed, it is true that the poorer provinces heavily rely on their social, the developmental indicators are improved as a result of expenditure of government. So when we cut the expenditure to those provinces or to those areas, we need to realize, or at least Parliament needs to have a sense from...
You can take it from there, yes. Okay, Jeremy. All right.
Okay. All right. I think the point is that, if poorer province relies a lot on this government budget, then when cuts are effected in those budgets, there needs to be a clear indication from government side what would this mean for service delivery, particularly in the more rural communities and regarding investment in those communities in that regard. So there needs to be that question being asked. But also coming to a point of strategic partners. I think the one of the points around the ERP is trying to emphasize on the importance of regional integration, take advantage of regional markets and grow, identify opportunities there. So there is that need to realize that as well. I think I'll leave here and give the colleagues to respond to some of these points. I want to talk to last point if I give to Dr. Blandi. Certainly, one point I emphasized towards the end of the presentation is that globally and also in our country, the recoveries of economies were heavily aligned on the rollover of the vaccination program. And we've seen in the many West countries a lot of debate globally in terms of, I had the president talking about apartheid on the vaccinations and so on. And clearly, you see that from the West countries, the expectations of economic growth is very high because, of the programs that their vaccination program has been very successful. You look at the US and some of the UK and other European countries. But obviously, our vaccination program has not taken off as we would expect it to, and that will likely affect the recovery in the medium term or even over the medium term. I'll give Dr. Alonso to come in, and I'll come in once all the colleagues have commented on some of the input. Thank you so much. Dr. Landy?
Thank you, Dimitonia. I actually asked Siraj, or if you can share the presentation, because Honourable Dikeledi as well as Honourable Ryder was basically talking about these issues in terms of access to information and the link with the NDP. So if we can just look at slide 10. So members, if I'm just going to try and make it clearer. On the left side of the line, you will see the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. So, and the reporting system in terms of monitoring is just in terms of monthly reports to the PCC. So where the information comes from, we don't know because it's not official information. Although this plan is also partly funded through the budget, the reporting is not through the standard budgeting system, which makes it very difficult to report information that is not official information, because the progress on the economic recovery plan, reconstruction and recovery plan will also not be audited. So in my mind, the best way to report any information which is linked to budgets that has been appropriated is through a legal system with official information. In terms of my studies, this is basically what I study and what my interest is. So in terms of my PhD, I really focused on the implementation on the NDP. And the finding was, for the first 5 years, the main issue is that the reporting system was outside of the government system. That was the main blockage of the implementation and getting results for the first 5 years. And the DPIM is also now trying to reduce those blockages by communicating with departments to basically all the indicators that are in the new medium-term strategic framework needs to be reflected in the relevant APPs. So what that means is that on a quarterly basis, those targets will also be reported on in the quarterly performance system. And that is an official system, an official process that's been driven by the PFMA. So in one of the other slides, I also try to ask members that we must support this one program for the intervention of the DPME. So next time, if members ask us to come and report on the medium-term strategic framework, we will be able to extract that information from the quarterly performance reports, because they created this huge database with all this information. And currently, we do have access. I have access. I have a password to get information from this database. So when I reported on my slides on infrastructure, for example, I was very hesitant to report information that I could not reconcile with the information that is in the quarterly performance reports. So that's why I indicated to you these are reports that that we get from other sources, it's not official sources. So a report, a monthly report to the PCC is not an official resource that you can reconcile with other performance information. And in the previous APPs, because we only reported now on the 0 to 6 months, so in terms of transport in specific, the indicators are very poor. They are not specific. The targets are really, you cannot measure them because they're reporting on, we have created an annual report on PRASA. That's the indicator. So that doesn't tell us or give us the information that we really want to report to you. So because some of the transport, specifically in roads, are reflected or funded by conditional grants, we will have to wait for the end of the financial year to get any information or progress on the outputs of conditional grants. Although the Treasury report to the committee on the expenditure, they do not report on the performance on conditional grants. I've requested the reasons and I've also, and they said it's performance information is the responsibility of DPME. And then I also asked the DPME, but the DPME says that's not the mandate to report on conditional grants. So there is this huge gap in getting official information. So this is basically why we showed this diagram to illustrate to members the issue in terms of the performance and the issue in terms of really to report to you on official data. Sometimes even in the State of the Nation address, the president asks information from departments and they provide him with the information and that makes up his State of the Nation address. But in many cases, I actually went back and I really tried to reconcile the information with the official data of departments. Then I couldn't reconcile that information. So I want to emphasize that the importance of official information and the importance of including indicators of these plans that are currently outside of the standard government processes to be included in those processes, that we can really update you on the real information to monitor. And then there was also one of the issues were on what is in the new budget. Members, there's no new money in the new budget. There's only money that has been reprioritized towards the first part of the year for social development and also for health. And then there's also a preliminary allocation for job creation in terms of the presidential interventions, but that money has not been allocated. That money will only be allocated during the adjustments budget. But what is important now for us also to try and measure the current performance of all those projects, specifically in the ones that Sipotelo presented today, so that we can also make sure that we can allocate the additional 11 billion that has been preliminary allocated. It's because if we didn't perform on the current 12.6 billion, why would government perform on the 11 billion? And also to mention, most of those are EPWP jobs and the 11 billion doesn't have a carry through effect on the budget. So it's just once off jobs, once off allocation, and whether that is the way we want to go or whether we rather want to create sustainable jobs with that 11 billion. In terms of, I think I can rather give Siraj also opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Nelia. Can you hear me, Honorable Chair?
Yes,
you can. Okay, thank you. I agree with what Rasani and Nelia had said previously, and just to reiterate, I mean, doing this project was really hard because there were diverse sources of information, and as Nili was saying, within the PFMA framework, a lot of it wasn't official information, wasn't, and so it was to some extent we had to use our judgment about how to present it, but also as you could see in the way we presented it, we were sort of putting in lots of conditions and saying we weren't sure if this was within the 6 months, if it planned in a much longer term framework and what the outcomes were. And as you saw in the conclusion, we also said that, you know, since October, there's been a lot of things that could have actually been a constraint on development. The other thing that was concerning for me, particularly as I was collecting information and contacting people in government with regard to the project, was that we see or we get snippets of narrative reports and some PowerPoint presentations, and we're not sure how government departments are communicating with one another. And just from the outside looking in, and I may be totally wrong on this, and this is something maybe members can interrogate government department members if there's a follow-up meeting or if there are further meetings on ERRP, but also monitoring and evaluation, is sort of the way in which they share and communicate information to one another, because based on the narrative reports and the information we've collected, you know, there doesn't seem to be a sort of an easy way to say this has been progress in the last 6 months. You know, these were long ongoing projects in that in the last 2 or 3 years we did this and we achieved this, and in the last 6 months this was value added to that existing work that had been done. And I think sometimes it's really difficult to do that because processes, communication, developing, you know, we saw a lot of drafts and terms of references and coordination plans within the reporting on the ERRP. And so those are things I think that members may want to hear directly from specific departments or from the cluster involved, or even from the presidency, or maybe communication with the leader of government business, bringing a team to the committees through that kind of process could occur. In terms of looking at the budget, I mean, as you could see from our presentation, you know, a lot of it was being done within existing amounts budgeted, a lot of the implementation. And so there's sort of saying we've had plans, a lot of what we're doing is continuing the plans and possibly intensifying the plans, but within specific emphases in terms of looking at how to build inclusive economies, getting women and young people and having a more inclusive approach in both race and gender. In development, looking at localization and building competitiveness and being able to export more and sort of rebuilding the productive base of the economy. And I suspect part of that would be coming out of the NEDLAC process to answer the question. I can't answer Honorable Ryder's question in detail about NEDLAC because also I'm unfamiliar with what's been happening in NEDLAC the past few years. I know it is sort of the legislation, it's a statutory body to bring together the different interests to discuss legislation before it's passed. But other than that, I'm not sure. So in terms of thinking through these kind of plans and the coordination and how it's reported on and monitoring evaluation, they're very real difficulties. And as Neely was saying, it makes within Parliament and the oversight process, because some of it happens outside of the official reporting, it makes it really hard. And so it makes sense to actually bring in specific departments or groups of departments in that process. Links to the NDP, I think, I was saying that part of what the ERRP is doing is sort of, to some extent, refocusing attention on some areas more intensely than others, and things like localization, building small businesses and village and township enterprises, and then more inclusivity, and then also the focus on public infrastructure and the state's role in that is sort of this kind of refocus within existing plans. And then related to that is the issue of how much can be done, and this is related to the question from Karim. If we are faced with the third wave, and sort of also in the process of a vaccination drive that will help move us out of COVID, the lockdown, and my personal feeling is that some of this could be prematurely on the agenda, and that a lot of the focus should still be on relief and support to poorer households and businesses struggling during this period, and the way in which budgets are done and allocated should actually be cognizant of that. And so we're seeing with this process a lot of sort of redirection of existing funds to certain kinds of emphases, but a lot of that seems to be even if it's talking about the next 0 to 6 months, it seems to be focused on almost on a post-COVID future rather than how do we get through COVID and then how do we deal with the fallout from COVID. On the issue of transformation and the sort of especially increased funding and budgeting to township and village enterprises in rural areas and those things. Again, lots of it's happening within existing budgets, but with an emphasis to have both budgetary and non-budgetary support and interventions. And I did try to list quite a few of the ones that I picked up from colleagues at Department of Trade and Industry and from documents from the Small Business Department, and then looking through also the funding. And there are also ongoing discussions, as I spoke about, a lot of ongoing discussions on how to make financing available and better funding of small and medium-sized enterprises, for cooperatives, business. One of the things one is picking up out of looking at the way in which government departments are reporting on their discussions with one another in this process is that there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of getting frameworks, getting agreements, getting terms of references, sorting out legislation, coordination, while also trying to implement, and they are implementing some things on the ground, but a lot of it that's being reported is sort of saying we're getting our plans and our acts in our ducks in a row. So I'm going to end there. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I don't know if colleagues Mapula or Spatello or Rashad want to come in at this point. I, I leave this also to the chair because we've been going on. There may be second rounds of questions, but just to make people aware that there are other PBO colleagues in the meeting as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think we'll leave it there, and then we'll take more questions, or if there are follow-up questions.
Is Njadu there? Because he has asked me to say he has to leave and I'll take over from here. Has he left already?
Yeah, he left.
Okay. All right. Okay. I thought he was going to exit by saying so. All right, fine. I know that my charger's troubling me. Sorry about that. I thought it's charging. Oh, dear. Sorry about this. Very quickly, colleagues, basically, we need to move on to the second set of questions. And what I want to ask is, Dennis, you said you wanted to come back, okay? So please do. Dennis?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah. Look, I'm really impressed by the interaction today, and some of the answers that we've come have answered some of the questions that I didn't ask, which is quite nice to see. So yeah, thank you for the second round. I think it's really just to say that I'm not really sure that I've got a picture of how this whole thing is being coordinated and by whom. So maybe I missed it because my connection did go down. I'm in Acacia and at the moment. My connection went down for about 10 minutes. But I'm not sure that I can see where this whole thing is being pulled together and by whom. The fact that the comment was made that there's no additional money in the budget for this brings into sharp focus the need for, let's not call it zero-based budgeting, but let's call it back to the drawing board budgeting, where every project within every department needs to be reassessed quite strongly to determine if it's going to be form part of this reconstruction program in order to see if it's actually going to be contributing, if it's contributing to growing the economy, to taking South Africa forward. And I think that's quite an important admission or analysis, let's not say admission, it was an analysis given by the PBO that the fact is that there's no new money, nothing extra is being given towards the ERRP. And in fact, if we're going to recover and reconstruct, it needs to happen out of the existing purse. It's a big ask, and I think that it just brings into much sharper focus the need to refocus the money that we're spending and looking on where we are spending it. One of the slides that was hurried over quite quickly related to how the 12 billion had been applied, and I would have liked to ask a few more questions on that and just see if that is really being put to best use. I didn't have a chance to interrogate it on the screen properly, and of course I don't have a paper copy in front of me either, but if we can just get taken through that just for 2 minutes again, maybe have that particular slide back on the screen, I think I certainly would appreciate it, and go into a little bit more detail of what those projects are, where it's being spent. Are they catalytic projects, things that are going to cause a chain reaction once they get implemented? So yeah, infrastructure, as we know, you're creating infrastructural capacity, it encourages growth. And so, you know, those are catalytic projects, but what else is being planned, et cetera, et cetera. And then look, yeah, small business as well, because the fact is that the DTI carries a massive burden, but they focus generally on the larger industries and so on. And I don't see sufficient focus being placed on the small business sector and empowering the small businessman, the informal trader, the person that's busy trying to get themselves up and started. And if one looks at the failure rate of those small businesses, I think it's massively important. So just a little bit more analysis, please, Chair, on where the money is being spent and are we happy? But I think we've been well covered, so I really appreciate it to PBO today. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Who's next? Jolani? Yeah, who's that?
Yes, Chief, what are you saying? I must say?
No. I'm just saying you must speak in isiXhosa, please, unapologetically. I was waiting for that. But anyway, are you wanting to say anything, Jolani?
Not really, Chairperson, but I think we must just maybe deal with this issue of translation that we are very much consistent. Ideally, I wouldn't want to speak this European language anymore going forward.
No, but don't right now. You see my inner chat group. I think Dicky Lady's got it wrong. Okay, can I just say this? I'm exactly the same person I am normally. Well, I'm just being a bit tired because of deadlines, but my point is not that you must speak in English. It's the reverse. I don't have any sympathy for myself. I'm dealing with my own frustrations with myself, not with Dikelet. I, if you look at the chat group colleagues, am mad at myself, not with Dikelet. I just think that's boring now because you said it so many times. It was funny the first time and I laughed. But it's not funny that I don't, Solani. Just read my chat. So talking about myself, but you see the rules of parliament. I'm a chair, right? So I have to abide by the rules. So I'm going to check what's happening. The last time, Jolani, I tried to raise it twice. They said, yeah, but we don't have the people. But I don't know now that we have this new virtual stuff and all, whether it's easier. So I will pursue it because it's Dutoy's right. Mr. Dutoy's right, as I know it. But myself, don't have any sympathy for me. So don't explain. I'm on your side. I'm not on your side. I'm on the side of rightness. Okay? And as I told you, my friend, this thing of Nguni domination also came up, okay? When a non-Nguni person refused to translate what he's saying, speaking person, and said, no, I'm not going to translate. Then we had this issue. And then I took it back. Trini Jinwala was the speaker. I don't know what happened. I got told by the Secretary of Parliament or something, Jolani, we cannot do it for like 35 committees in the NA alone and so on. But I will raise it again. I'll ring Jomo now after the meeting. So that's on the agenda. I'll find out what the latest policy is, okay? So you go ahead and speak in whatever language you want.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say that Mr. Ryder has just posted something on the chat room. And I think we need to act very responsible here and not attack each other. We are trying to decolonize our society and not everything will change all at once because we don't want to cause anarchy and chaos. The fact that we are using the title Honorable One does not mean that that is an end in itself. We will deal with those matters holistically.
It's a separate issue, yes. I don't think that's relevant.
We take one step at a time. So please, Mr. Ryder, be responsible and you must act like an adult. We are dealing here with the national
question. Likewise, colleagues.
You know what, please, Dennis, you know what? Can I chair now? Because I am chairing, apparently, because Mr. Njadu left without formally doing so. And we appreciate his presence. In fact, I wanted him to finish. Look, guys, there's no need for all of this. There's no debate about this. Jolani is absolutely right. He's entitled to speak in his language. I was speaking about myself, Dennis. It has nothing to do with... I'm trying to tell my sister there that I'm exactly the same person. You know, I just am under some time pressures. That's all. I had to rush and huff and puff and get here by 4:03. That's the only difference. But I'm not in a bad mood. I'm more annoyed at myself. I'm talking about myself existentially and politically. There's nothing to do with you, Dennis. And when have you ever heard me use the word honorable? You see, there's nothing stopping anybody from using the word honorable. You can always say Mr. and Miss or member. I have very rarely used the word honorable, as you will recall. You can look it up. I stopped using it because it's a colonial term, in my view. So those who want to use it can use it in Sisutu or Shivenda or whatever. But they might have to use the word if they don't use Mr. or Ms. or member. Okay? There may not be a literal translation for that in some languages. I don't know. But that's not the issue, Dennis. It's not about whether you use HRH.
It's the right of people to speak their language, not least the Khoi and the San communities and other traditional communities. Wonderful. Wonderful. I hope Zulari will agree that the airport there is now Stearman and Port Elizabeth's been renamed. Wonderful at long last. So
definitely,
there's no point here. Can we not fight now, please? There's no need, Dennis. You're saying something else. It's got nothing to do with language. It's got to do with colonialism. It's not a language issue. Whether we should or shouldn't use honorable. Well, don't use it, my brother. You know what, Dennis? I don't use it. It's member or Mr. Malema, as I said once in the house recently, when I was told I can't say Malema. I said, Mr. is fine. So member and Mr. and Ms. is fine. You don't have to use that HRH. Right. Okay. Can we go on? We don't say honorary right, honorable, do we in our parliament? I think that's the British one. They say honorable rights. What? Honorable? The honorable right member. I don't know what right means. I suppose because he was representing a constituency, Dennis, don't you see? Honorable right member of Cambridge. All right. Matter resolved. It's not an issue. Dennis's point is irrelevant, Zulani, to the language. He's talking about...
Chair, sorry. I won't be rebuked about that. Sorry. I think, I think you've misinterpreted what I was saying. I was responding to his comment when he said he doesn't want to use the colonial language or the European language. Then I said, why does he use a European title, which is HRH, his Royal Highness Chairperson. And as far as I know, most African royalty eschew using those titles. But it's not really worth arguing about. Which is why I want to rebuke for my comment.
Oh, I see. You weren't responding to me. Okay. So now, can we please move on? There's no debate here. Dennis is not disputing the right, Zulani, of you or anybody to speak any indigenous language. Okay? That's not dispute. All that is being asked is, can the chair, I think it's my job, to check what is the policy? Because when you press interpretation, often the interpretation is there. Now, I've got the new version on iPad of Zoom, and I can't find the interpretation. When you started speaking, I tried to look for it. It's changed, Zulani. Maybe I'll speak to the IT people and ask, where's the new way of getting there? So I will check. But as he's right. Mr. Jutoy is right, that I don't think committees have that service. But I will find out whether it can be done on occasions. But Zulani, let's not debate the thing. And Dennis, let's move on. Please, as much time. And can we move on and finish, please, man? All right, so Zulani, what's the point you're making, my brother? We agree with what you're saying, that we need to pursue this matter. In the meanwhile, you can speak whatever language you want. Go ahead, Zulani.
No, thank you, Chairperson, for this. I'm pretty covered because I had spoken at length during the first round.
Okay. All right. Just
raising it because the answers, you know, they always fall short as a result of the non-understanding on the part of the presenters. So that is fine for today as long as we're going to resolve this matter going forward. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Yeah, my brother, we're not going to resolve it. I'm going to seek to address it. Okay. I don't have the power. Okay. But I will raise it and I'll come back. I'm going to ring Mr. Nyambi right now.
I'm giving you the power.
You're giving me the power. Okay. But as it happens, you speak beautiful English. You're a poet, right? That doesn't mean, therefore, you mustn't speak English. Because, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you're right. When you pose questions or make contributions in a language you're most familiar with, a lot of the nuance and meaning you invest in that cannot be easily invested in another language. Absolutely correct. I'm a sociologist apart from everything else, and I know some of this stuff, and I used to teach some of this stuff before 1994, although I'm out of my depth now. Okay, Dennis, good questions you raised there, apart from your comment in the chat group, which is a jive at my friend there, and he's obviously not going to reply, but we move on, you can discuss that offline. Now, help me in Kululeko. I don't see any other hands up, eh? So the second round is a small one, in which case, can I hand back to you, PBO, Dr. Janjis? Before you do, can I raise something, right? So firstly, Dennis, as I understand it, colleagues, comrades, it was never the case that they said there's new money. And that was what a hoo-ha was from COSATU and the NGOs. So they haven't, to the best of my knowledge, PBO, am I right? They've never pretended as if there's going to be new money. Where the new money, as I remember it, was going to come from was the loan guarantee support program, which has turned out to be a dismal failure, if I may use that word, very disappointing. Secondly, the matter I should raise, because it's very close to the heart of all of us here as I know it, we took a decision across political parties that while we recognize the considerable constraints on the budget and the unprecedented situation we're in, and we know there's no money there, but we also know if you don't even give that very small 350 rand grant, the disaster that's going to befall us as is happening. So in our last budget report that both committees agreed to, finance committees, we actually said we would, bearing in mind, I can't remember the words in Kululeko, bearing in mind the financial, budgetary, other constraints, economic and so on, we would urge that I think National Treasury considers extending the grant. So can I ask PBO then? Obviously, you know, as Dennis rightly said, where is this going now? Do we have any like 4 cents or anticipation, as if we could, what's likely to come out of the MTBPS and the adjustments budgets on some of these issues? I think bearing in mind the new circumstances of a vaccination program, a possible new third wave and so on. So the question then is, you know, is there some way PBO has done, I know you haven't scattered the amount of work, and we don't want to kill you. Is there some way in anticipation of the MTBPS now, you do some work, and we can speak to Joe as well on the other side, and I think this is more an appropriate matter, mind you, it's actually the lady and Sepiso, that if we extended that grant, I mean, is it going to totally destroy us financially as against the consequences of not doing so? So on that grant, I think you've done quite a bit of work already. If you could put it together in the next month or so, there's no hurry. Think about that. Let's see what other committee members feel as well in the weeks ahead when we look at appropriations. I'm sure that's going to be a big issue coming up. Okay, thanks, colleagues. Over to you then, Dr. Jantjies.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and other members. We will definitely look at that, Chairperson. But as I understand, the relief has expired, but we were planning to look at that in over the time. The question of, you know, whether the ERRT, who coordinates it, I think it's a question that government would have to respond to. But I think what we're trying to say to the committee, to members of the committees, is that the way the information is put out, it's so very difficult in a way of getting it together in a more meaningful way. And it certainly makes it difficult for members of parliament to really process it, or, you know, we want to thin slice it in a way that is useful for oversight. I think that's the point of trying to decide. But also, Chairperson and members, there probably has been a short period of time lag, you know, to have very meaningful progress on how far this thing has went on. But I think the point we also would like to emphasize that most of the things that were set out in the plan, it's already within the medium term strategic framework. It's already within the government programs. So it should be easier to take out information and put it out there. And I think it's a point that we're trying to put out there that you know, committees need to request that information be quite useful, easy to monitor and measure in this regard. I'll give Dr. Land to just comment on the issue of, oh no, the point I wanted to talk to as well earlier, it relates to the issue of rural areas and return of the budgets and one of the very important points, because local economic development is a very important part of this, should really become centered. And clearly, the need for coordination of economic development and growth and structures has to really be coordinated at all levels of government, and local economic development and regional development is very important as well in the process. But one issue that came up when I look at the recent report released by the Office of the Auditor General, it relates to the issue of capacity as well in terms of getting these things implemented, and to see at times the funds are not used for the infrastructure as it is planned for, funds are not used up. And as an issue that we also want to emphasize and highlight in this stuff. I'll ask Dr. Olandi to come in and specifically look at the issue of about 12 billion and any arguments and queries will come in. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I saw that in the chat group. You've already done that, 17 billion. But do you have any, like you say, maybe, I don't know, Dvasani, what you PBO people would say, but I'll put a question related to that. I mean, do you have some ideas yourselves, not that you're going to prescribe to us, where, Nelia, we could extract and reprioritize that, excuse me, 17 billion from?
But just before Nelia comes in, I think just quickly before coming, I think the point about the relief, it's only seen as an expenditure. It's a bit of a project, but it's not an expenditure in isolation. It's an economic enabler as well, because spending, it also takes as well, tax revenue coming in that regard. So it's so it's definitely right up will be very key from our side. We'll think about it.
Yes, quite. Yeah. You know what's good? You see, like, for all my experience, right, for a moment, I'd forgotten the economic stroke tax side of it, right? Because you think it's 350 rand, Dr. Janjis. And you know, you wonder now, what can you buy? You know, to exaggerate beyond a few sweets and things, right? I mean, metaphorically speaking, obviously you can do more. So when you think about it, of course, you know, like it's hitting me now that you're saying it. It's a good intervention you made, because at least for me, and maybe for others of us, I can't speak for them, but for me. So you know what it makes now suddenly? Then 17 billion as a whole going back into the economy in some way.
Yep.
But that apart now, I was thinking more of the social polarization, the turn towards volatility, social protest, you know, the political management of the society in conditions like that, right? So, yeah, you are right. That's very interesting. You know, I'm not saying, Dumisani, we don't want to, like, lumber you guys, but a small, like, not too long, 6-7 pager. I think, you know what, Kimmy, I can't speak for the Appropriations Committee. But, you know, Comrade Dikile is not likely to say no, because she's annoyed at me being, she thinks I'm annoyed at her. And I've explained. That's the reply. Great. I mean, I'm just laughing off. So I'm teasing, right?
I'm not easily annoyed, Che.
Yeah, well, the point I'm trying to make is, you know what, I'm an ordinary member of the Appropriations Committee, right? So I am saying it as, I think, as we come to the appropriations now, I don't see anything wrong, particularly. I mean, you know, you guys doing some work in that area and sliding it into the discussions of the joint appropriations meetings on that side and our side, so that we prepare, you know, for the empty BPS, but we slide in some things in our reports now. But think about it, and then the chairperson of the committee will, you know, further interact with you offline. Over then to your team, Dvasani, to Nelia now.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. The only reason why I'm just giving the ballpark figure of 17 billion is that we did the presentation to appropriations last week on the appropriations.
Right.
Yeah. So last year, the allocation was 17.6 billion. And over the 12 months, between 4.4 million and 6 million people actually, they were beneficiaries of this grant. And in this year's appropriation, there was 2 point something, and now we're adding another 2.6 or 2.8, so it's just over 5 billion in the current budget. So you can do the calculations. We, at this stage, we only have that just over 5 billion in the budget. And last year, when we last checked, the expenditure was about 17.3 billion on that 17.6 billion. So that's why I just had the 17 billion in mind. But that is basically what we've spent last year. Honourable Ryder, you asked if we should go back to the drawing board. In some instances, we really do have to go back to the drawing board in terms of duplication, in terms of expenditure, certain frameworks. And that's why we also started that whole project of looking at the frameworks of conditional grants. It just in agriculture, which is so important, we already identified a lot of inefficiencies within the three grants in agriculture. So Siraj has put up the slide for us. You asked us about the 12.6 billion that for the presidential employment in interventions. So you can see there's a mix in terms of the performance. I just mentioned agriculture. So agriculture indicated that they performed at 126%, but it doesn't mean that they the reporting is correct. But even just in agriculture, the grants basically the purpose of the grants is also to create jobs. But then in the grants, when they report on the grants, they actually report on the EPWP jobs, which is funded from another source. So I think there might be a bit of duplication in reporting if they overperform in by 26%. And then you will also see Sipatelo indicated that corporate governance, they didn't spend any of the money to create jobs, or they're still in the process. So in the first 6 months, nothing happened. But we're almost in the next financial year, so I don't know when they will spend that money. So it might also be that, Honorable Karim, you asked us what will happen in the MTBBA. We're trying to get actual information, expenditure, but the fourth quarter expenditure report is not out. That will give us a very good indication of what will happen in the MTBBS in terms of rollovers or in terms of funds that are returned to the revenue fund in terms of the actual expenditure. So yes, I think we covered most of it. Thank you.
Dennis, you're happy with the reply, right?
I am indeed. Thank you. Happy. Thank you.
So can we draw to a close? It's about close your time. It's 17:46. Is there anybody want to raise anything burningly important? Remember, this is an ongoing thing. And we're going to find out. You see, the bills, colleagues, are coming a bit slow from the NA side, partly because I think since COVID, Treasury hasn't been churning things through the cabinet process either. So, you know, normally we get lumbered with lots of bills in this quarter, but it hasn't happened. For the reasons I've explained. So I want to apologize to the PBO. Now, I accepted responsibility for botching up today's program from my side because I took it the meeting was in the morning, okay? But on that matter of bringing you in so late, I am certainly not responsible, and I don't want to identify the person who is because he's a great guy and these things happen. And we were on a long leave and so on. But, that, you know, I'm sorry about the late notice. But colleagues, we have to now think, I'll look creatively at the program and see what's possible to get some sort of report. But remember, we don't want Treasury to come to the NA committee and say the same things and come here and say the same things, right? So I don't want these fights about from one particular party here about why we're sitting together and so on. So when it comes to briefings, let me see what they're up to. Let's talk about it in Kulileko and see whether they're having a quarterly briefing and it includes the ERP, then we can join the NA committees. So I'll look into that. But the other thing to say is that I want to finally make just one observation. There are some people here, maybe Mr. Jitoy and so on, I don't know, who are in some of these structures that determine the overall program of Parliament. I have raised it, Mr. Njadu. I suspect my sister there, the lady, agrees with me. It's quite disruptive, actually. If you have the House at 10 o'clock in the morning, in cases where we're not sitting for the whole day. So for example, colleagues, we sat for how long? Till about 1:30 today in the House, okay? Why couldn't we have started at 2 and finished at 5:30? So 3.5 hour sitting or so we had this morning, if I'm correct. Even if it was a 4 hour sitting, we could have finished at 6. Why then disrupt the morning program of all the committees in the NCOP? It makes no sense to me. It's different, colleagues, when the NCOP is sitting for the whole day. Then obviously committees have to come maybe after 6 p.m. or something. But I don't understand the logic of it. I've raised it with somebody, and I've got no answer that makes sense. Having said that, I once again apologize, I wasn't here, but, you know, I want to say to PBO, I have not fully read, I must confess, browsed through your submission yesterday, and I've picked up quite a lot in the from the time of 4:03 p.m. to now. And I think overall, you've been very helpful in what you've said. And we will look into joint briefings with NA to avoid you having to do both. But it's difficult with the lack of synergy between the two houses. Having said that, I thank everybody and for their forbearance, and I'll follow up right now with Mr. Nyambi on the matter that's outstanding. Is there anything in the chat group that we need to know? No. Public comment at the moment on financial flows amendment bill. Yeah, I know about that, Mr. Ryder. I know about that, yeah. And there are three private members' bills, two from the, if I'm correct, from your party, Mr. Ryder. Okay. Somebody asked, how many months will the 17 billion last? Mr. Jotoy. Yeah, you asked it before. Okay, very quickly, answer that, Nelia or Tumisani. How long will it 17 billion last? Is it for the full financial year?
It's a year thing, but I think, Chair, I would rather, you know, we give you a more written up something, you know, which we give you scenario.
Yeah.
But that's more like an annual thing.
But it's telling us, it's giving us a sense. Look again, Bukeleri, obviously this matter will come up in appropriations, but looking at the larger scheme of things, it's useful you mentioned 17 billion. I forgot that it's that. Well, that's small in a way. I mean, okay, we've got big problems and we can't afford to forego one single cent. But, you know, quite frankly, colleagues, let's think about it. 17 billion can surely be found, okay, in this particular context of a large budget. And, you know, given that we are, you know, obviously going to go through a rough time for the next 2-3 years, there's no like idealism, populism, yeah? It's going to be horrific if this 350 grant, as small as it is forgone. So let's think about it. Let's try to engage with Treasury. Let's be pragmatic and realistic, but let's not forego what we agreed to in our fiscal framework report. We referred it to the appropriations committees anyway and said they're dealing with it, but for what it's worth, this is what the finance committees think. Okay, colleagues, thanks for everything, and thanks for all the forbearance. Yeah, Zulani, yes?
I thought you were going to raise the issue of the quadrillions in relation to that 350.
Let's not have another debate, please. Okay, thanks for that mischief making at the end. Okay, bye then, colleagues. Goodbye. See you tomorrow. Dikelele, keep well. Bye.
Keep well.